Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. Today we're talking TV, and to tell us what's on the box, I'm joined by Alice Vincent, arts and entertainment writer for the Daily Telegraph. We'll be chewing over Shane Meadows' final instalment of the This Is England series as we approach the finale this weekend. Online, we'll look at Netflix's latest commission, a brand new series of Charlie Brooker's satirical drama Black Mirror. And finally, we'll discuss the influx of literary classic adaptations that will be flooding British television over the coming months. All that ahead here on the Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. Welcome to the show, Alice. Great to have you with us, as ever. Let's begin with a show that hit headlines last week, once again, for more reasons than one. We'll come on to that in a moment. Black Mirror has just announced it's had a third series commissioned, this time by Netflix rather than its previous broadcaster, Channel 4. Before we talk about that, let's hear from its creator, Charlie Brooker. He talked to Channel 4 last year to describe to them what the show is all about.
It's a worried show. It's a show that's worried about today, even though it's often set in kind of near futures or sort of allegorical futures, it's really always about now and what's going on now. I kind of felt that there's a lot of drama. Most dramas tend to be kind of human interest dramas about relationships or, you know, people overcoming great odds, or crime dramas and this, that and the other. And I kind of felt like there weren't many things that were talking about the way the world's changed in the last sort of 10 years, and just everyday life has changed from just you walking around and experiencing the world to staring at a rectangle like that.
That was Charlie Brooker talking about Black Mirror. It's interesting, actually, Alice, there. He mentions it was allegorical, and we did have this incident last week where seemingly or allegedly life was kind of imitating art, imitating life, if you will.
Right.
Does that speak to what an accomplished satirist Charlie Brooker is, it as much as anything else?
I mean, I think it is coincidence, and I think the person who was most amazed by the similarities between last week's news and this debut episode in which the Prime Minister has to have sex with a pig was Charlie Brooker himself. And I think that's what's so amazing. But I think it's more the subtle things that emerge over time, and then you think, oh my goodness, that is just like Black Mirror. I think if we're talking about him as an accomplished satirist, it's the fact that people watch those episodes of Black Mirror and they are genuinely scared afterwards because it seems so close to home.
I mean, it's interesting. It's to talk about, we often talk about sort of how you classify different genres of TV, and Black Mirror is, yeah, it's satire, but it's kind of drama. It's blackly comic,
it's,
I suppose.
Incredibly dark, yeah.
Is it one of the harder things to categorise? I mean, as a critic yourself, do you think it's not easy to put it into a...
It's a slippery beast, yeah. I mean, you think of satire and you think of the thick of it. You think of people who have arguably always been sort of Charlie Brooker's bedfellows as TV writers. You think of Chris Morris. It's a satire, but there's nothing very funny about it. And I think, you know, you always end up writing a very long title like Darkly Dystopian Technological Drama Thing, you know. So, but I don't think the genre is important. I think what's important is, you know, the fact that it exists and that it remains very powerful. And the minute America got whiff of it, it was enormous.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting point, I suppose. There's a couple of things. One, it's gone from being a three-part series to a 12-part series, a more, I guess, traditional format. But critically, I wonder, putting the show on Netflix rather than its Channel 4 audience here, I mean, it opens it up quite literally to a completely different audience, international. Will it change what it is? Will it change its appeal? Because, you know, his humour is certainly quite particular. I would say it's fairly sort of British in its sensibility
it is,
in some ways.
Yeah.
Is that a challenge, or is that maybe an opportunity to show people a different sort of side of things?
I think what will affect it more than the international and global reach is the fact that actually Black Mirror is one of those shows that spoke a lot to, you know, the chattering Twitter classes, media types, people who are connected online. And yet it was 1 hour a week for three sort of slightly magical weeks when everyone would be freaking out and it really would be a water cooler moment. Mm. And now it's going to be possibly the bleakest thing to binge on Netflix.
That's going to be a tough 12 hours, isn't it, if you watch that back to back?
You just never want to leave your house again and throw out all of your technology. Yeah, so I think that's what's going to change it. And I think even Brooker himself realises the irony of having 12 episodes made by what is a technology service that has completely reinvented TV.
And what about, I guess, I mean, this might be perceiving a broader trend where there is not one, but we saw obviously recently Armando Iannucci being recognised for his stellar work on the US TV circuit. Yeah. Is this the next kind of brain drain? Is there a transatlantic movement for some of our best TV talent? I mean, is Brooker and Iannucci, the likes of them, interestingly, both of that sort of satirical bent, yeah. Are they lighting the way, perhaps?
Well, the interesting thing is that Black Mirror is still being made in partnership with Endemol, who got it on Channel 4 in the first place. But business chat over... Originally, they wanted to do... There was an American party interested in making an American version of Black Mirror. And what's been interesting is that has been parked so Netflix can take over. It will be interesting to see how American it is. Jon Hamm was in the Christmas special last year. I hope it still stays very British, just because, as you say, the humour is. Whether it's a brain drain, I don't know. The world's getting smaller. It's a global platform.
And in terms of what we might expect in Series 3, I mean, people will probably think back to, yeah... Well, the sort of unforgettable sight of Rory Kinnear staring down the barrel of a pig, if that's the right expression.
Do
we know who we might see? Do we know what we might see? Or are they keeping their cards
They're keeping their cards so close to their chest, and that's part of the power of it. And I really hope that when it does come out on Netflix, everyone respects the spoilers, you know? Mm. It is one of those series that in some ways has more twists and more turns than the likes of Game of Thrones or something. And... I think it has to be properly experienced. So we don't know. It's going to be going to production later this year. And I think he's currently writing and we probably won't find out until it emerges on Netflix.
One to watch. The third series of Black Mirror will be available, as Alice says, on Netflix this December. We anticipate in the meantime, catch up with the first series on the Channel 4 website. Interesting, yeah, the involvement of technology in the show for supposedly technophobes. let's move on, less of that. Alice, to another Channel 4 production, though. This is England 90, the final instalment of the much-vaunted series by Shane Meadows. The first three took us from 1983 to 1988. We're hitting the 90s, dealing, maybe predictably, with the rave culture, football culture. This weekend sees the series finale. I'll ask you for your thoughts, Alice, in a moment. Let's hear a little of the series thus far right now.
It's me, you, the gang, and the open road, mate.
Why have you packed so many bags?
We're going to a rave.
Condense it down a bit, brother, because that's just ridiculous.
Who likes salmonella? Who likes violent illness?
Boy, yeah, big boy.
Give us a kiss.
Get out of it!
Good night, guys.
Good night.
What was it, you up there?
You sound really stressed. Tell me what's up, Combo.
I won't have a son. I won't have the love of my life without what that man did.
If someone like had never been to England and they had to draw a picture, this is exactly what they draw.
So great performances, great soundtrack, always guaranteed, of course, with Shane Meadows. Bring us up to speed, maybe, with this series. Has it been a kind of a steady evolution of this sort of franchise, almost, that people perhaps are already familiar with?
It has and it hasn't. I think the interesting thing about This Is England is that there will be a couple of years before you'll see another bunch of episodes, and you remember the characters because they are so memorable, but you sort of forget the very tangled, complex web of relationships and friendships. And let's not forget, this all spun from a film that was released in 2006, so we're nearly 10 years on now. And in some ways it's very convincing. Those characters are still lovable. Somehow they're all still friends. What's less convincing is that they've got themselves into yet another subculture. This is a group of people who were skinheads, who were into New Romanticism. And that is a slight sticking point, but that's the trends thing. I think if you overlook it, the stories are still incredibly resonant.
Well, now, one of the drivers, and I mean, people, I guess, who are familiar with Shane Meadows' work, is that he does manage to solicit absolutely brilliant performances from people. Do we see more of the same? I mean, some of it, what's interesting is you mentioned it nearly 10 years, basically, since it started. Some of his original players have gone on this really stellar journey. And now people, you know, in the stateside will be recognising them from other shows, this sort of thing. Is that a measure of what Meadows, I guess, means to his players, that they're happy to come back and that they can still deliver for him?
He's such a respected director, I think, and such a respected filmmaker. But I think that is what's so remarkable about it, is that I don't think when the first this tiny indie film was made about rough Sheffield upbringing in 2005, that anyone signed a contract to be doing this so much later. And that is probably a testament to his direction. It's almost more believable that the cast would stay together than this group of friends, fictional friends, would stay together.
Do you think that people will... I wonder whether Shane Meadows... I mean, it's very clearly the sort of final instalment, or it's labelled as such. Do you think that, I don't know, overzealous commissioners will have been saying, Shane, come on, you know. We've got, you know, lots more recent history to trawl through. Do you imagine that was a conversation that happened in boardrooms somewhere?
Oh, almost definitely. I mean, I really want to see more. It's just sort of getting into the point of which I can, you know, I've got easily accessible memories to. And I would love to see what they do in 1996. I want to see what happens when the Spice Girls come along. I want to see what happens when the Millennium Bug comes along. You know, you feel like you could watch this cast of characters all the way through. But he will, of course, end it on some kind of devastatingly emotional moment, and maybe in a few years there'll be another one, who knows.
Back to revisit for more. Well, you can see how This Is England 90 concludes this Sunday 9 p.m. On Channel 4 for viewers here in the UK. Bit of a change of pace. Alice, next up we're talking about well, another thing that British TV seems to be inundated with at the moment, adaptations of literary classics. Sided with Rosie and Inspector Calls. It seems like there's been a bit of a renaissance of these. Am I mistaken? Have these always been knocking around, or are there a few more all coming to prominence at once?
It's a complex combination of the two. So the BBC did commission these 90-minute sort of feature-length episodes, adaptations, like four of them over the space of a month. So it was like a kind of a thing, but it is interesting because it instantly takes you back to those heady 90s days of Pride and Prejudice, and the BBC, I think BBC, you do remember these kind of slightly Leviathan, you know, fancy dress situations.
I mean, a cynic might say, well, hang on, look, people know these are stories that the public like, so let's tell them again and again and again. Is it cheaper than original programming? I mean, I wonder what's the... We talked about the commissioners before.
Right.
Do they think, look, this is a gimme? Okay, it's going to be quite costly, but we know it'll hit the spot. Is it a bit of a lack of imagination, or is that being slightly unfair?
I don't think you're far off the mark, but I think what should be noted is that this is the BBC's attempt to go head-to-head with Downton. So they're on a Sunday night, they're in exactly the same slot, and they have thrown a lot of money at it. You know, we've got Jeb Mercurio, who, ran Line of Duty, which was a massive show for BBC Two last year. You've got Jim Broadbent in there, you've got Vanessa Redgrave in there.
I'm loath to say it, but it's jam-packed with national treasures.
It's a national treasure.
We shouldn't say it.
Jamboree.
You have to. Yeah. Let's look at a few in a bit more detail then. And I'd like to ask you, are they actually any good?
Yeah.
What about Sided with Rosie? Again, I mean, that's a story probably every GCSE student here in the UK knows pretty well. A good adaptation? It's
yeah, I mean, you're starting with the best one there.
Okay.
I mean, I think if we're starting here, it's all downhill from here. But Sided with Rosie, yeah, and I think what is a very deft adaptation and very sensitive, and didn't, you know, it can be tempting with Sider and Rosie to have all, you know, those golden cornfields and young beautiful teenagers falling in love, and actually no, it's quite a tragic story, and I thought that was done really well. That was a good one.
Okay,
thumbs up.
That leads me on to maybe some that
the bad ones
weren't so good. Any what was it, were any actual standouts, any sort of mesmerisingly bad, or were they just not quite so good?
I think they were just the sort of slightly stodgy three-starers. You know, in Spectacles, everybody hates that play, I think. You know, why would you ever adapt it? It's just like, here's a sledgehammer, let's talk about morality. And, you know, I think that even though that was actually quite a good adaptation, the source material is just not right. I think Lady Chatterley's Lover got a few points for dealing with class division, but it was otherwise very coy and it didn't really deal with sex, and they decided to base half of it in the trenches and it was all a bit weird. So a real mixed bag, yeah.
Will we continue to see these, though? It was interesting you mentioned the sort of scheduling considerations up against Downton. Obviously, that's kind of departing the scene. Do we just need to gear up that this will keep happening, whether it's a combination of, you know, cynical commissioners or people who can't be bothered, or it's their easy bankable hits, just more of the same? Or do you think something could shake things up a bit more?
It's happening across the board. I mean, I think A-level students the country over will be rejoicing. There's the Michael Fassbender Macbeth film coming out imminently, and that actually looks amazing. As you say, these are classic stories. They're always going to prove interesting, but I think there's the element of maybe book adaptations of more biographical stuff. So there's this kind of real-life Downton family who are very rich and fell down, and that's, you know, that's rumoured to be the BBC's next big period drama. I think, in short, stuff of old with rich people or love stories always going to prove
always,
a hit.
Always bankable. Yeah. But what about, I mean, some people will say, oh, you know, back, go back to the golden age of TV, if ever there was such a thing. And part of it was about, you know, telling unknown stories.
Right.
You know, bringing things to people's attention that they never would find otherwise. Do we just need to accept that maybe, you know, it is a bit of a numbers game and that that will happen simply less frequently, for better or worse?
Yeah, I think actually, if anything, with the likes of Netflix, with the likes of, you know, the BBC is in the news for a number of reasons of late, and they have got number issues, but they also put out incredible stuff that you'd never see before. You know, The Returned is coming back, I think possibly BBC Four, and that's in a bizarre mental sci-fi situation, and Channel 4 is always going to do interesting things. I think it's the time of year and people like to snuggle down and watch this stuff, but it's not that. There is hope in sight.
Just wait for the spring schedules, that's what you're telling me.
Yeah.
That brings us to the end of today's show. Alice Vincent, thanks as always for being with us. Here in Studio One at Midori House, this has been the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. Thanks too to our producer, Holly Fisher. Join us again at the same time tomorrow. Mark Mason is joining us for our weekly book review. But for now, thanks very much for listening.